Thanks for tuning in to The Real Deal Show, brought to you by ebodyboarding.com and Tribe Boards.
Well, hey, everybody. Jay Real back again with another episode of The Real Deal Show. And with me today is somebody who has a huge part in my coming up in the sport of bodyboarding, but more importantly than that, in the sport of bodyboarding in general. This person, Patty Serrano. Hello, Patty.
Hi, Jay. Patty. You act like you've never met me before.
No, I know. Well, maybe some of our viewers or listeners on the audio podcast have never met you, but Patty has a massively significant role in the growing of our sport, particularly in the early days of the sport. It would not be where it is today without Patty. She has a history that is unmatched in this sport, and we're going to get into all of that during this podcast, folks. I mean, it's rather than me try to spell out all the accolades, we're going to get to them. We're going to get to them. So we're here, by the way, in Oceanside, California, where it all really kind of began
right at
for
this
you.
Beach. Yeah.
And so let's get to the nitty gritty first, okay. Patty, because, man, I have a massive amount of respect for you, and I'm going to say where we met in the midst of all this. But where, just to get the nuts and bolts out of the way, where were you born and raised?
Oh, okay. Well, I was born in Alhambra, California. I'm a Cali girl.
Cali girl.
True and true. And my dad used to drive us before the I-5 and the 405 down through La Habra to the beach. So I was raised pretty much on the beach. My dad was a fisherman, so my sister and I and brothers, we got to go to the beach a lot.
Oh, so water person from
the get-go. Total water person. And I also found out that I like being by water. Like when I'm out in Colorado, I like being by the river and stuff like that. So I'm a definite water girl.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, so born and raised in Alhambra. And
actually, Costa Mesa.
Oh, in Costa Mesa.
Yeah, we moved down to the beach, to Costa Mesa.
Okay,
yeah.
So Costa Mesa, so Orange County. And then at some point, you seem like a free spirit. Were you doing all kinds of sports as a younger woman? Were you into, I know you're into music. We're going to talk about that too. I mean, were you a free spirit as a youngster?
Yeah, I did like a lot of sports, and I was definitely, a gypsy. You know, I remember sleeping in my Toyota station wagon out on the North Shore way before people were stealthing or, you know, van life or anything.
Yes, it is van life way before van life was a hashtag.
Oh, that was my first experience, and waking up in the middle in the morning and looking at the ocean and having my little bran muffin and fruit and stuff. So, yeah, I've been at it for a long time. And so when people go, God, aren't you, you know, when I travel in my van, aren't you, like, kind of afraid? No, I've been doing this for a long time. But anyway, you know, back to your question. Yeah, so I definitely love the ocean, and you know, it was very inspirational when I decided to get in my car one night from Costa Mesa. By the way, our reunion's this week in 60 years, so that can put everybody into perspective.
High school?
Yeah, how old? Costa Mesa High School.
Costa, okay.
Okay, so that puts you don't have to say my age, but that'll kind of figure out.
I heard 30-year reunion.
Oh, okay.
That's what I heard.
Anyway, 60-year reunion, okay. I don't know if you do the math there.
Awesome.
But anyway, so I headed out on the freeway. I wanted to find somewhere that was an hour south of Orange County, and Elm Street came up. And Tom Morey, by the way, loves this story because it was very divine how,
when we interviewed Galarmy, this happened too. You're so popular. She's so popular. Her phone rings during interviews.
Oh, gosh.
Do you have to answer?
I should, but that's okay. I'm going to turn it off.
You should.
You can edit that out.
Okay.
So I got off. And, you know, Jay, from that moment, I think if you believe in divine or anything like that, my steering wheel literally went like this. And Tom loves this story.
Yeah.
I go down Elm Street. Then my steering wheel went on Coast Highway this way. And I went, where am I going?
You were just aimlessly driving.
I was just looking at Carlsbad, California. It wasn't the village of Carlsbad then, remember. It was kind of a little funky surf town.
Right.
And then I went and turned left on Maple Street. And there was this for rent, this cute little beach cottage. I go in, get the number, and I actually rented it. Well, as life would have it, it was a block away from Tom Morey's house.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know him and Marcia were living there.
Okay, and were you even a surfer or body surfer?
My sister was a really good surfer. I was a terrible surfer. I had like vertigo. I couldn't stand up, and I couldn't ski or surf because I had something going on. But
Let me quickly interject and say, she said Debbie, her sister, by the way, is Debbie Caldwell, the founder of Custom X Bodyboards.
There you go. Yep.
There's a little accolade there.
Yeah, so Debbie and I ended up moving into that place. But see, I knew Tom and Marcia on Kauai. A lot of people don't know this about the story. I actually knew Tom before the Maury Boogie.
Oh.
And Marcia and I used to body surf out at Brannakees Beach on Kauai.
So you lived in Kauai for a spell.
That's where I met Tom Maury. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so, this is 60s. When I met Tom Maury, he said, "Who's that girl that you always are out in the water with?" And you remember, it was rafts and body surfing. There was no boogie boards. I go, "Oh, that's Marcia." And well, anyway, lo and behold, 51 years later, they were married for 51 years. Wow. So it was really cool. But that's where I met Tom. So when I reconnected with him in Carlsbad, someone said he lived over on the corner.
And you had no idea.
When I rented that house that Tom Maury was a block away. And by the way, Jim Favor, who doesn't get mentioned a lot, who was Tom's partner, was up on the other corner. So we called it like the Divine Triangle at one point, because I went over and knocked on Tom's house, and he goes, "Who is this?" And I go, "It's Patty." "Oh, Patty, what are you doing?" I go,
I remember you from Kauai, kind of thing.
Oh yeah, no, we were actually friends in Kauai. He remembered Patty,
Oh, okay.
He goes, "What are you up to?" And I go, "Well, I'm living a block away with my sister Debbie, and I'm going to college, and I'm taking business law, and blah 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 blah." He goes, "Oh no. You're a beach chick. You got to come look at this boogie board." And he gave me this board, Jay, that I went out on Chestnut, which is a block away, and I rode it. And you know how a lot of people remember their first ride?
Sure.
I can remember what I had on. I can remember which way I was going. Now, remember, I couldn't surf, but I get on this board, and I remember I didn't go straight off like most new people kooks. I started to cut. Oh, shit, this thing can turn.
No way.
And now my eyes are like this.
Did you have fins on? Swim fins?
I had fins on. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I got into the wave, and I remember my eyes were like, when you laugh and your eyes kind of squint? I was laughing and enjoying so much that I went and just rode this thing in. I got out of the water. Tom was a block away. I walked up to his house, and I go, "Tom, I'm in."
Wow.
And he knew that once I got on the board. And so that was actually, believe it or not, my experience on that first wave was kind of like what made me think about how we were going to get other people on it, if we could just get them out in the water.
Yeah, now this is about mid-70s, right?
This was 77-ish.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I go to work for Tom. And
he had
about eight of us in the office. It was we now have a little building, and Bobby and Joey and Debbie and all these people are outside in the warehouse. And it was Tom, me, Greg Labuse, Luis Houlihan, Jim Favor would come in. There was about seven or eight of us in this one little office. And all I had to do was answer the phones, because the phones were starting to ring.
Yeah,
and
people wanted to order boogie
boards. Yeah, so Tom, he printed that little ad in Surfer Magazine, a little business kind of ad. And so I started answering the phones, and Tom goes, "You got to get out of here." And I go, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, no. "I want you in that boogie van out there, and I want you to go hit up all the surf shops and talk to them like you're talking to them on the phone right now." He goes, "You're amazing on the phone." Well, you got to know the backstory was I had really low self-esteem, because I had come out of a broken marriage. I had a 2-year-old kid. I was a single mom. And so for Tom telling me that, it was like watering a flower.
Yeah.
So I go out there and start hitting up the shops and figuring out, remember, I was in love with the product, but they weren't. These surf shops didn't want, they didn't want the boogie out in the water.
It was your job to convince them they're going to sell
a lot of these. Figured out real fast how to close these deals. And maybe we can take that on into my future when I start doing a sales training course, because it was straight quintessential out of Tom Maury's playbook.
Well, so you had all the elements. You had the gift of gab. You're a media person like me. You love a microphone. So good at talking to people and engaging them. And you were like this pretty young California girl at the same time. And you rode the thing, so you knew what it was all about. So you had the full package to get out there and sell it, and Tom recognized that.
Well, that's exactly the point was Tom recognized what I didn't recognize in myself, because I was just,
coming off of all
the things I said. I was down there with the 2-year-old kid trying to go to college and make ends meet. So anyway, I get out there. I remember my first commission check was $60, and my rent in those days was $250. And I remember it didn't match. So I went to Tom. I said, "Tom, this isn't working. I can't do this. Please don't make me go out on the road again." He goes, "Patty, you're the only one. you're the only one. And I went, oh God, it put so much pressure on me. So, you know, we can fast forward to when I went out to see you. Now you're like, what, 14 or 16 years old?
I was 16.
And how, what year was that?
That was 1980.
80, okay.
So you had started the Jamboree series.
Right.
Then it was called the Mori Boogie Challenge.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, when I met you, there was a little bit in between. Now Tom's saying, because you had asked me, did you do any sports? And Tom knew I was like a state champion in outward canoeing. Oh. I had started in Balboa and Newport and then went over to Hawaii and won some championships over there. So he knew that I had come and brought the sport back up here to California. In fact, we have an Oceanside Canoe Club right here.
Yeah, I just saw him out here like an hour ago.
The sport now is huge.
It is.
But at that time, Tom knew I was very involved in it. So he goes, you know, Patty, you know how you put on those regattas with outrigger canoeing? Could you do that with the boogie boards? And I go, well, I thought you didn't like competition, because remember, he wasn't really.
Yes.
He goes, yeah, but I think it'll be a good way for us to, you know, promote the sport. So we had an event here. I mean, we did all of them. In fact, I brought this for you to show, Jay. This is the first how to put a boogie board contest on.
This is so epic.
It's typewritten, so how far back does that go?
Yeah.
And look at the edges. They're all kind of burnt from, this is like,
yeah,
what, 50 years old.
This should be in like a hermetically sealed.
It should be, yeah. How to do a press release, okay, because that's all we had. We didn't have social media in those days.
And you made this?
This was about my wheelhouse, yes.
No,
this is by Patty Serrano.
Wow.
And then I also formed the first competition circuit, which was, and you might zoom on that later, but the Western Boogie Association was Scott Evans, Roger Waller, Tony Prince, names you've heard of today, the OGs, and we got together in my house down in Carlsbad and on Maple Street, and we formed this Western Boogie, our first competition circuit, and I really want those guys to be known. You know, they were the first. A lot of people go, we were the first this and that. Roger Waller was the first pro.
Yeah.
You know, and so.
I interviewed Tony on this podcast.
Oh, you did?
About a year ago.
Okay, and he said that?
Yeah, so I'll put a link to that in here.
Okay.
As well. Yeah.
So anyway, Craig Libuse designed the logo. It's opposite of the old Mori Boogie logo. So the Western Boogie Association was our first competition circuit. And then in it, I also included a heat sheet, you know, if you didn't know how to do
it's
that.
It's just amazing.
And then
it's
a little
manual.
And then what to do, as who, where, what and when, a typical contest. So what we were trying to do was get people to put on their own contests in these cities.
Okay.
And they did.
Yeah.
You know, and all over the United States, and New York, we went to New York, we went to New Jersey. All these different towns were putting on Mori Boogies around that time.
Which let me segue. First of all, quick question, sidebar, what was the very first contest for boogie?
Very, very good. That's
do
a lot
know?
Of, yes,
were
I did.
You the one who set it up?
Well, the first actual outing was when Tom wanted to see if we could do something down on the beach, was at El Porto in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And all I did was take a bunch of t-shirts and a boogie board, and Jay, to this day, I've got a picture of this little outing. There must have been 40 people there, and I kept saying, how'd they get here? How'd they know about this? We didn't have social media or anything like that.
Was it just flyers?
Just word of mouth. There's this lady coming down to give out some free t-shirts.
Whoa.
And that was the first beach encounter. From there, we did here, which was put on by Tom Moore and Company, and I was actual a judge. So
that's
I was
here in Oceanside,
right here at the harbor, South Jetty.
Wow.
I don't know if you know. I would say that's the first event ever, because then from there it gave me. Tom liked the idea of the events, and then he said, "Now go put on events." What I wanted to do, and this is where it gets kind of like in the sales, in the bursting of the sales area on the East Coast. He said, well, what do you think? And I go, well, why don't you give me 30 boards and those, you know, real estate ropes, four poles, and let me just go out on the beach and let people sample it. So in this picture here, you can show it later, but in this picture here, it's me at Cocoa Beach, Florida. And I'm telling all these, it was like my first outing in public speaking.
Wow.
I had to tell these kids what a boogie board was.
Let's put that up to the phone. And by the way, if you're listening in the audio podcast, I do apologize. There are some visuals here, but you can always watch it on YouTube later.
Right, right.
Man.
So that outing there was a two-day event. We went down the first day and then had, you know, thousands of kids ride the board. They were running over. It was free, you know.
Yeah.
I could ride this. It wasn't a raft. It was so. This was the first time they'd seen a boogie board in on the East Coast.
Yep.
Now Tom says, "Okay, Patty. So now what? You've got these people stoked." I went, "Well," and in my little sales brain. You know, I didn't know anything about business, but I knew that we had to sell some of these. So I went and called all these surf shops, Ron John Surf Shop and Kite City and all those places, Ocean City, you know, and said, would you take a boogie board so that when I'm on the beach, I can direct them down to your shop?
Yep.
Oh, no, we don't want any of that stuff. I said, I went to Tom, I go, they don't want it. I said, do you mind if I send a 3-pack to each one of these and put them on consignment?
Yeah.
They, of course, they took those. So what I
sure,
did...
Sure, because they didn't have to pay in advance.
They have to pay or no ship or anything. So what I did was, when I was down on the beach, I made sure I directed these parents, you know, to the shop that had boards.
Yeah.
So literally, they called me later and said, people were running in here wet, scooping up those 3 boards. I've got orders for 12, 24, 48. Do I call Tom? Yes, you do. So Tom got barraged by all these calls, and we literally didn't have the money to make them.
Wow. Well, see, now this is a
business 101.
This is direct evidence that what you were doing worked, and that's kind of where I come into the...
Right.
I'm just going to dive super quick
Tell
into that.
Tell me about your experience.
So it was 1980. I had just started riding boogie boards, and I was on rafts before that.
That's right.
But boogies were the new thing. More control, more speed, all of that stuff.
And cool, and the cool factor.
They were, it was like a new thing, right?
Right.
And so I was so new, and I was like, I wanted to consume anything I could find that had anything to do with riding a boogie. And you brought Tony Prince, Roger Waller, Bobby Owens to Ocean City, Maryland.
That's right.
My hometown at the time in the summer of July of 1980.
There you go.
There, I saw a flyer at a shop, said Maury Boogie Challenge and Contest. Come down and see the pros. And I was like, my God, these are people from California, and they're pros at this sport. I didn't even know they were pros. So I show up, you're there, it's a beautiful sunny day, the waves are super good, and I watch those guys go out and do a demo, and I was just blown away at what they could do on a bodyboard. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I was instantly hooked.
Yeah.
Your marketing worked great on me, and the next day I showed up, and it was my very first competition.
Wow.
I lost probably, I think, in my first heat, but I had so much fun just being a part of that boogie energy that you brought from California.
Thank you.
I'm a product of your efforts.
Oh, wow. That's really pretty
there
special.
You go.
That's
so,
special.
Anyway.
Can I just interject what
Please.
Jay did to me? So I'm sitting there, you know, and anyone that's been to any of my events know that I can turn into kind of like the royal, trying to do everything, you know what. So I'm trying to, you know, focus on all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And here's this kid behind me kicking the sand on my chair. What, 80, 1980? That's 45 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember this kid, and I go, who the hell, you know, digging under, kicking? Where's all this sand coming from? I turn around, and as you know, the quintessential Jay smile, here's this little kid, which I was a kid, you know, you were a kid to me, just smiling at me, and I go, oh, it's you. Did you want to come up here and help me or something? And he goes, and remember, you just, he was right in there. He joined the group, you know, the riders that were traveling with me, and Jay was immediately just, you know, one of our ambassadors. He turned into the ambassador of Ocean City real quickly with that smile and that persona that, as many of you know over the years now, it's never left Jay.
Thanks,
so anyway,
Patty. Enough about me.
Yeah,
this
but
is
that's
about you.
Well, I know, but that,
but
that,
thank you.
But I do remember the moment, though. I remember the moment when I met you. That's when I met you.
And well, the cool thing is we're still friends. I'm still friends with all. Well, not Bobby Owens. I haven't
seen
him
we
since
seen Bobby,
for many years.
Yeah.
But Roger and Tony. We're all.
Well,
that's
the
friends.
Beauty of this whole sport. And once it gets into your blood, is Tony, Roger, Scott, all of us are all still together. And if we're together, don't even try to come in and badmouth any one of say, oh, did you hear? Because we are so, when we get together, it's like, it's
back
just,
each
I don't
other
even
out.
Know what it's called, but we're just like, we're so in sync all these years. We have reunions every once in a while. And there's a love like you cannot even explain,
Yep.
And then those guys were picked in the early days, and then we'll fast forward to Hawaii, but you look at when I was now going over to Hawaii to pick a team, Pat Caldwell, Ben Severson and Keith Suzuki ended on up in my Hawaiian team. That was circa like 1980-ish, you know, and look at them.
Yeah.
So those guys had the spirit for me to pick them as riders and look at them today.
They're were the one who connected them with the whole thing. You connected the dots, brought them into the fray, and like you said, they became legends of the sport.
It's just so, so amazing, you know, to think that the passion of the, and we talked about this at this month, we're celebrating Tom Morey month, you know, October, that's 2 years since he passed, and that spirit, Jay, has just permeated through everything this month. You know, we've had people showing these, you know, historical pictures. So that same spirit that went through me and Tony and Roger and Scott in those days and you meeting you, it wasn't an accident. You know, it was not an accident. This was the spirit of the boogie.
Yeah.
And then to go for me to go to Hawaii and meet Pat, and Pat takes me out to Ben's house in Hawaii Kai, and then I go down to Point Panic to meet Keith, that wasn't an accident.
No.
It was all part of the whole picture of bodyboarding, and that's what's so wonderful to be a part of it for me.
Yeah, well, the whole vibe of the boogie that Tom threw out was enjoy, right?
It's right.
All the ads said enjoy.
Enjoy.
Right? So the whole vibe was not to go out and rip, tear, and lacerate and, you know, be aggressive per se in those days.
It was,
man, go out in the ocean and enjoy
riding
waves.
Boogie for a good feeling,
and the boogie made it eat for a good feeling.
That was his part of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was, it was a vehicle that made it easy for people to get in the ocean and ride away first time. Like you relayed that story, how you were just grinning from ear to ear after your first crack.
That's what I thought, that, you know, like if someone, you know, like you go to Costco and you sample a chocolate eclair and they go, where are these? You know, if you love it, well, that's what happened to me. I sampled the boogie board and I loved it. And I've always called it a boogie board. Even when everyone changed it to bodyboard, I still called it a boogie board.
Because it was called the boogie when Tom invented
it. Maury boogie, put your body on a boogie, and I'm still a boogie boarder.
And you know, that term is actually now coming, it kind of come back.
It is.
Even the top guys go, let's go boogie.
Let's boogie.
It's just, it's come back. So, okay, so we're now at the point where you've assembled this team, you've created this culture of, you know, fun contests and the challenges, and eventually those became called the Jamborees when Mary Lee Christensen took over. But somewhere, was it around 1980 that you stepped down from this position
as
marketing?
It was 1981. I had gone on, you know, we sold to Kransko, which a lot of people don't know the history, which was a big company in San Francisco. And Kransko came down and met me in my office at Tom Morey & Company and said, well, what part do you think you can play? And I had this one little slide that Tony had given me about the sport. It might have even been at El Porto that day. And John Rosecrans, who was one of the owners of Kransko, said, you're hired. And he said, and Tom loves this story because, you know, Kransko bought from him, so he didn't have a whole lot of nice things to say because he lost the boogie. But in my story was, you know, Kransko took me under and I still got to be with the boogie board.
Yes.
And so they came down every year and said, how much money do you want to make and what kind of car do you want to drive? So I'm sitting there, little beach girl, going, I'm sitting on top of the world. Yeah. I'm flying to New York and, you know, Chicago. I went to Toys R Us in Saddlebrook, New Jersey. So Kransko really taught me about business.
Yeah.
You know? And I had to fly up there once a week on Fridays to their sales meeting. And so right around that time, my brother and I were singing at a club down in Carlsbad.
Because you were then in a punk band called Patsy Pink, right?
Well, that was just a little bit before that. Yeah, okay. About 6 months before that.
She had pink hair.
So I go up to Kransko and said, I'm leaving. And they go, what? You just took $300,000 from 7-Up Bottling Company. And we'll lose that promotion, you know, the Sunkist promotion.
I go,
no. Well, I'll stay on for the summer, and I have this lady that I think can take over. And they hired this gal from Trish from Australia that they knew, the guy, blah, blah, you know, typical networking.
Oh,
she came out, I don't know if you ever met her, but she only lasted about a half an event.
No.
Because when she saw that we were all so tight, It was hard to penetrate.
Couldn't break into that.
We were really tight. So I told them, I said, I think Mary Lee Christensen, she's an event person from Carlsbad, I think she could do this.
How did you know Mary Lee?
I knew Mary Lee from, I can't remember where I met her, some kind of competition thing, because she she was in she was a competitive athlete also.
Yeah, swimming.
Yeah, swimming. Yeah. So I don't remember, but I know that she was really good at what she did as an event organizer. So I vetted her with the Kransko. And they actually, after Trish couldn't make it, they hired Mary Lee.
So, hold on, you quit because you wanted to pursue the band thing?
Well, they thought I was crazy because they said, you know, well, I guess I am. But, you know, the whole thing is when you look about looking back now on my life, you can understand why I did that. Because I felt that you've got to do things before you turn 60. And in those days, 60 was old. I would say probably you got to do things before you turn 80 now because I'm approaching 80. But in those days, I did this podcast called Do It Before You Turn 60. And when I went to meet Rosecrans and John Bowes, it was quintessential that kind of thinking. If I was going to be in a band, I was 30. I needed to do it now while I was still young and trim and not wrinkled. I mean, ticking. I couldn't do it now, but I had to do it then. And okay, I have this great job, but... Well, lo and behold, and I remember you saying this once before in my lifetime years ago, everything you do, Patty, you land on your feet. I remember you saying that. And coming out as a in a band, I mean, I had so much fun. I mean, we played all these gigs. We even played at the championships for Mary Lee. And so everyone got to know me as Pat C. Pink, which was Patty Caldwell Pink, because pink was my favorite color. So anyway... So much on that. All I can tell you on the years that I sang, which was five. I have a 5 year. I do everything in 5 year increments.
Okay.
So the 5 years, 5 years.
And then you get burnout and move on to the next.
And
thing.
So I literally kind of semi-retired at that point after that. So but in between there, let's see. That would be circa 80s. I moved to Lake Tahoe with my son, who was just Olympic bound skier in my mind.
So you did it for him.
I did it for him, and he thanks me today because he's an incredible skier in Colorado, and he's still at 49 like you, doing crazy stuff, you know. But so we moved to Tahoe, and then I would go down to Santa Cruz. Mary Lee would put on an event down in, you know, Steamers Lane, and I would, you know, judge, or I'd come down here to Oceanside and judge. So I'm still kind of involved, but, you know, pretty much living in the mountains. So by the time I got back in 90, Bodyboarding Magazine had gone under with the recession that was out. And a couple people called me and said, well, you know, you're working at a graphics company. Why don't you do a little magazine? And so I said, well, I want it to be by bodyboarders. So I knew you lived in San Clemente. Regina lived in San Clemente. Pat Caldwell lived in San Clemente. I called you guys and I said, could you come down and we'll do a little meeting on, can we do this? I don't know if you remember that meeting.
Oh, sure. I remember meeting your place.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I had this place where I was really into the whole Japanese thing where I had the low table and I was totally into minimalism and everything. Yeah. And so we sat at this little Japanese on the floor. And we came up that night with Bodyboarder International Magazine. Yeah. And it later became BIM, but that was the name that we all voted on that night. And then from there, we went to BIM nights once a week. And you and all the San Clemente people would drive down. And we would, a little carousel of photos, and we would pick the cover shots.
Yeah.
And it was Kirk Blackburn and Georgie Marino would show up, and we would have these BIM nights. And I look back on it now, and, you know, I knew that you guys were just doing it out of love, but I don't even think I offered, like, you know, some drinks or Godonas.
I feel like we brought food with
maybe.
Us.
Maybe. It wasn't, my point is, it wasn't around food. It was around, oh, really? Okay.
And the birds.
It was around the passion of bodyboarding.
Yeah.
It was strictly just boogie boarding and picking the right cover. So I had a 5 year run with BIM, and this is one I just brought. It was this one was Robbie Crawford, Bodyboard International Magazine, Inside the Wedge in 1996. And the printing company gave me this one, you know, as a kind of a memory. And I have all the issues of it, but Roger Waller is storing them for me right now.
I feel like I have one of my covers on BIM.
Do you? Yeah.
Like
I wish
like
I had it with me today, but
it's
have
at
a couple.
My
yeah, you have
on
a couple.
The wall. Yeah,
I think you were on several covers, one in the wave pool and somewhere else. But so that was in the early 90s, 90 to 96, something like that. As I was doing BIM, we had the BIM house down in. Oh, really? We had the
birds are getting close.
We had the BIM house, and I would invite people over to. We had like it was like a six what was it, about 6 bedrooms and a guest house. And Glarmy rented the back guest room. He lived there for a couple years. And then all these bodyboarders that come into town, I would have a room for them, you know, so they were able to stay there. Yeah. It wasn't the 925 that is the famous boogie board house, but
that was the first place I ever stayed when I first ever came to California.
Yeah, that was another.
It was on the beach on Pacific Drive.
Both of them were, but this one was a little bit bigger house. But that house, even Keith mentioned in his interview, 925 Pacific.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a really famous
boogie
board
it was
house.
A boogie flop house.
Yeah, in fact, I first saw Mike Stewart there when he was about 15. I forget somebody brought him in. I said, "Oh, a little blonde grommet, you know, whatever." You know,
yeah,
I had no idea.
Right. He was nobody back then.
Yeah, but you know, it was really kind of fun. And then when Glarmy came into town right around that time I was publishing BIM, he told the story in your podcast a couple weeks ago when you interviewed him, but him and I immediately were attracted to each other because he was an athlete and I was a competitive runner at the time.
Yep.
And so George said, "Can he come stay with you?" "Yes, he can." And here's a picture of Glarmy and I. We were like...
Let's put it right up to the camera. Can you see this?
We were like... literally, what would you call it? Practice mates. You know, we would run together, play tennis together. He even mentioned that, you know, we'd play tennis, we would go go-karting, and we've got some such great stories of our life, you know, down there in Carlsbad in
those
days.
Years,
you know,
for sure. He was at the beginning of his
career. BIA comes a couple years after BIM. The BIA, I was thinking, as you know, kind of quintessential Tom Morin company. You know, we've invented the board.
Yeah.
What do we do next? So I said, "How about the Bodyboard International Association, BIA?"
And we'll stay tuned for part 2 of my interview with Patty Serrano.